Music Respawn. I'm Kate Remington with many, many members of the Destiny Beyond Light composing team. Mike Salvatore, Sky Lewin, Josh Mosser, and Michael Sechrist. It's great to have you all together, and I think what would be fun would be to just do a little quick round robin. So, Mike, it's great to have a chance to talk with you again.
Isn't this like our fifth or sixth time, Kate? I mean, this is awesome.
It is, and I've never forgotten that you were my very first ever guest on the series. So I'm just always so happy about that, and so thankful that you got the series started.
It's nice to see you again.
Yeah, and Sky, it's always great to catch up.
Likewise, thanks so much for having us.
And Josh, wow, this is great. We've seen each other at GDC, but we haven't had a chance to talk. So thanks so much for joining in.
Very welcome. Very happy to be here.
And Michael, wow, you know, I've loved your contribution to the last few chapters of Destiny, so it's nice to have you part of the conversation too.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
You know, this latest chapter of Destiny, Beyond Light, is so interesting, and it goes in such a kind of a deep, dark direction. Aramis is the new enemy, and it requires the Guardians to really go to a place that they've never been before, you know, calling on these powers of darkness to defeat her. And all of you have said that what's so interesting, what made this project, the music, so interesting is this fine line between light and dark. I love that concept. And maybe, Sky, you could talk first about what those early conversations were like with the dev team and the story writers and what kind of ideas they gave you for the music.
Well, yeah, I mean, it is a pretty fun process, and it's always very collaborative between us and everyone else in the studio. And obviously the music wouldn't be what it is without all of that, because what inspires us to take the score in a certain direction often always comes from something that the studio as a whole is building. And that often means we're talking with narrative and we're finding little bits of the story, and we're seeing concept art, and we're all these different bits are like bouncing around in our heads and kind of helping us shape how we feel like that needs to sound. And this, like you said, was a really fun one for us because it pushes in a different direction, and it kind of forces us as Guardians to look at things from a different perspective. And that was a fun thing to score as well.
I can imagine. It's been really interesting to play because you're really pulled in two different directions as a Guardian, because you're pushed by the Exo Stranger to really follow this dark path as much as you can, and really get to the bottom of it. And yet you've got Ghost being kind of your, well, Jiminy Cricket kind of conscience to tell you that, you know, you're really going to a dark place here. And it you don't realize until you've finished the campaign how it's going to end up. So it must have been just a really, a cavalcade of ideas and directions that you could go. And so, Mike, maybe you could talk about how you first got started writing the themes for this.
When we first got together and started working on it, we were in our super secret remote location doing our composer's sync. And I just remember sitting around the guys and like throwing ideas around. And you start to get a feel, it takes a while, but you start to get a feel for the pieces. And I love hearing everyone's take on like what dark means and what light means, you know, because everybody's got a little different vibe on that.
That theme, the perseverance theme that we first hear in the opening cutscene, I love the heroic nature of the theme. And was that kind of the starting point for you guys to sort of build the soundtrack?
Well, I know that was one of the first pieces we wrote when we were on our composer's sync. Sky, I can't remember exactly, but it seemed like that was written pretty early.
Yeah, so the melody in that is kind of the main theme of the release. As you mentioned, the cue that it actually came out of was Beyond Light. That's the first place where that melody, I guess that was its first incarnation. And then we obviously did several different takes on it, one of which is Perseverance, which, yeah, you hear fairly early in the campaign as well. But that theme is sort of, it has a bit of the darkness, but it also has a bit of the heroic Guardian-esque feel that you kind of come to know as a Guardian and as a Destiny player. And there's like a balance between the two in that theme. And so part of what we were going for with that in particular was to use that to represent that the Guardian is having to face this challenge of using the darkness and that entire balancing act that you started the conversation off with.
What's so interesting about Beyond Light that you see on the loading screen is the way it's almost like being on a board that's set on top of a ball, because it can go either way. And in fact, it does go either way, the melody. And so the way that you've used that sort of, I don't know, kind of the slidey nature of that melody is really, really cool.
Right on. Thanks. Yeah, I don't want to give too much away, but there's definitely, I mean, it's a thing that we've heard before. And there's definitely connections there, but the way that it kind of builds is definitely got a bit of, you know, the militant structure to it as the strings go, and then especially as the brass come in. But the way it starts, it sort of blends out of the opening bit of that cue, at least in Beyond Light, which has a connotation with things that we've seen in previous releases.
And it also, I would say, draws on some of the some legacy stuff. There's hints of a couple of legacy bits in there, like the "What do Guardians fight for" and stuff like that.
Yeah, there's that little flourish that I remember hearing in the music for The Farm, Michael, that you wrote. The little, I don't know if you wrote that tiny little figure, the little piano figure, but I remember hearing it for the first time in The Farm in Destiny 2. And so it's kind of neat to hear that folded in too.
Yeah, sometimes I feel like we're in a big melodic soup
at this point. Stew.
That's why we call it gravy.
Yeah. Yes, much, very tasty gravy.
Yeah, for sure. Well, Josh, how early in the process were you brought in to work on the score?
I was with this one from the start. My first one at Bungie was actually on Forsaken. That was when I got my first, like, hey, Sky heard something that I was working on and said, write more. So for Beyond Light, it was a much bigger involvement.
Yeah, there's something about your cues for Destiny. And I remember picking up on this with your cue for the Rider in Forsaken. There's this forward momentum that just really, you know, pushes you forward. And especially if you hear one of those cues and you're on your sparrow, it's like, I don't know, galloping on a horse out west or something. So those cues, I think, are just like really, I mean, everything is great, but those cues in particular are just, they really like sweep you along. And has that been a style of yours like all along?
I don't know if it's yeah. I mean, it probably comes from a heavy rock influence. I tend to make things that are loud and big and bombastic, and that's
why we love you so much, Sky. I mean, Josh. Sorry, we love Sky too.
Yeah. Oh, and also, Josh in the rock background, or the background that he had just alluded to, he plays a lot of the guitars on pretty much everything now, and so you might notice the guitar playing has gotten quite improved since he's a much better guitar player than I am, and I used to cover some of it.
Thank you.
What's it like, Michael and Josh, working in this Destiny soup or using the Destiny gravy? I mean, does that make it easier in a way? Or do you find that it's, I don't know, kind of a challenge to use the themes and still, you know, maybe sound a little bit like your own composing style?
I can't speak for Josh, but I feel like we've been living with these melodies for years. I mean, I've been working on Destiny since 2012, starting as a tester back then, but and then obviously in D2, a lot of the gravy, as Sky put it, was created there. And so it's like, it's nice, a nice resource to draw upon, especially when you're in an art form, like it's easy to get stuck. Not easy, but it can happen. So it's always like, oh, I'll go to this, get some gravy. And sure enough, you're out of your rut.
what I find interesting about it is finding new ways to use it. That's always the challenge with it. It's like, it's nice. It's really nice to have this big library of melodies to pull from when it's like, I need a specific emotion or I need a feeling, you know, I need heroic, I need melancholy, I need something that's going to say that within the Destiny universe. But to take that and then go, okay, how do I put a small twist on this to make it unique or make it slightly different or make it have an undertone of something else? That's what I find really fun about using the Destiny.
Yeah. And speaking of twists, your cue on the soundtrack is called Forbidden Knowledge. And it really grabbed me because you've used one of the original, like OG Destiny themes. And right at the very end, the harmonies like really get twisted. And it's just, wow, it just really gave me chills. And again, it pointed out that this is not, you know, your straightforward Destiny Guardians, we're going to use the light the whole time kind of story. And that was just a great reinforcement of that.
I'm glad it had that effect. That was the exact intended effect that I was hoping for.
It's really effective. And I love how that theme is really kind of woven throughout just the entire soundtrack, but it's not, you know, it doesn't club you over the head because you can break it up into smaller parts or just use like a tiny, tiny fragment of it. And so Mike and Sky, I'm just wondering what in your mind is sort of the ideal Destiny theme?
I'm going to let Mike answer too, obviously, but the Cube Guardian and that melody, that's kind of, that is the main theme for Destiny. So I think that's my answer. It's pretty much defined.
Well, if you judge by how many times it's been used, then that's the winner, I think. I think that one, that from Destiny 1, that Guardian piece has certainly proved to have a lot of resiliency. One of the things I love hearing is when the other guys use it and they use it in a way I wasn't expecting or harmonize it in a way I wasn't expecting. It's just kind of shocking how many different ways you can do it. There's some other ones too, especially some from Destiny 2, some themes from that have become pretty well used too. And it is, like the other guy said, it's always nice to have that ability to sometimes weave it in and then give it a new spin.
Michael, one of the things that I appreciate about the cues that you've contributed is the quietness of them, as opposed to, you know, the really bombastic combat music or some of the incredible boss battles. And Deepstone Lullaby in particular just really stands out because it's just so almost peaceful. Well, it's a lullaby, but but it's also like really, really peaceful. And so what was the context originally for that cue?
Yeah, it's funny. For that cue, I had, at the time, I had my son was 2 years old. He just turned 2. And I had just recently found out I was going to have another kiddo. So my brain was definitely in, oh my goodness, baby land. So I think that's part of where the lullaby nature came from.
I was just playing about 20 minutes ago when I was up in the helm, and that's the cue that was playing. And it was just, it was a nice moment because I'd just been in the middle of a public event, and it was like, whew, nice to come back and be somewhere a little bit more peaceful. So.
That cue is obviously a very special one to all of us and our fans. But I don't want you to leave thinking that Michael's all lullaby. Michael can go very dark. Mm-hmm. Just saying,
I'm gonna say the same thing.
he might look innocent.
He knows how to cook with the
yes,
gravy.
He does.
Yeah. Okay, so what are some of your like smoking hot cues that you're like super proud of?
I mean, we're obviously all working on this stuff together, but some of the stuff I'm most proud of is the Prophecy Dungeon. The work I did on that, I thought that came together really nice. That's definitely what comes to mind. Obviously, Deep Stone. I'm proud of all the stuff we did on Beyond Light. I think Beyond Light turned out like really great.
Right. And Mike, you've got these incredible composers that you're working with right now. So what is kind of your role with making sure that everything has a consistent sound? I mean, I guess that is your role, right? But how do you do that?
Well, I think we all together sort of keep redefining what the boundaries are of Destiny music. It's one of those things where when you hear it and it doesn't sound like Destiny, someone says it. Someone says, yeah, it's not there yet, you know? But we all take that role. It's not like there's one person who does. Obviously, I think since I've been around probably the longest on the team, I can sometimes come to that conclusion a little quicker maybe sometimes, but everybody does.
As I've been playing it, you know, over the 7 years, it's just been amazing that there is just something really distinctive about it. It doesn't sound like any other soundtrack from any other game. And so it's just been a phenomenal effort by everybody to make it sound unique and sound like itself. So I don't know. That's obviously not a question, just a little, you know, fangirling thing, because it really is just an incredible effort that spans years now, which is amazing.
Thank you, Kate.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, yeah, 7 years. That's so cool. And that's such an important number for Bungie. So one of the things that I noticed, especially because, you know, when you listen to the soundtrack, you're hearing all the music so close together. There's this incredible chime, like a really deep Russian bell that appears in a lot of the cues. And I'm kind of wondering what the significance of that is.
I don't want to give away too much, but we'll just say it's tied to what the Guardian is acquiring and using and wielding in the campaign.
Yeah, that makes total sense. And I love that Europa is an incredible new setting. And in a way, it like a lot of the other planets that you go to, it's its own character. So what were some of the things that you wanted to bring out about the landscape or the quality or the coldness of it?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, the core of it is the frigid, icy solitude that the destination evokes. And there's like, you know, just windstorms and the feeling of being just enveloped in this desolation that makes sure the music conveyed. And a lot of that we did with different approaches. Some of the percussion might be a little bit more white, noisy in that frequency range, which, you know, from a mix perspective isn't the best thing because it tends to get swallowed up by the wind in the game. But as a piece of music, the effect that has does enhance a lot of those emotions that we were going for. But I'll let the other guys talk about it too.
I would say that it was actually a pretty big challenge to try to get evoke a feeling of cold. There was a lot of synths that we went through to try to find the right tones and the right timbre to actually make something that felt that way. I think we all kind of added our own unique flavor on what that would be. And that's really kind of what made it be so special.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'll just say that I love the challenge because I just love synth so much. So it felt a little like home for me for whatever reason. yeah, not that I live in Antarctica or wherever, but it was great. And I also love like the exo nature of having like, you know, robots. It's good stuff.
Yeah. Well, speaking of robots, the new season of The Splicer is all about the Vex and the darkness that they have brought to the last city. And as soon as I got into that first opening level where you see the world as the Vex do, which is sort of this neon wire frame, like almost like Tron, and the synth music is just so amazing. So how did you guys work out that sound?
We had a lot of fun with that. It was very much inspired by the space and the intention of where it's playing and what it represents. And basically we had some concept art and we got in a room together, and this was one where we're just like, okay, let's do something until we're all happy. And, it took on a life of its own. And Josh took a lot of additional effort and ran with it to make that whole palette and, you know, build out what you experience in the game. He took a lot of additional energy on that. So I'll let him touch base on that too.
Yeah, I'd love to hear about that.
Well, actually, one of the things that Sky said early on when we kind of got into this was this should be primal Vex, not your normal, like the core of what Vex is. This is what this should sound like. So we kind of stripped things back to try to get to a more pure sense of what these things would sound like, really heavily relying on synths, keeping in some of the talking elements that you hear in a lot of the traditional Vex stuff, but really kind of like trying to drill down on it. It's like, okay, one sound, one idea, one other sound making the melody, just trying to keep it very, very simple throughout.
you know, I can imagine if you're actually standing next to one of them, they would kind of give off these weird little hum vibrations, or, you know, how when you get too close to something, you get like a little bit of an interference sound. And so I don't know if that ever struck you, or if you put that in the sense at all.
The talking element did, yeah. So when you're talking about something like, you know, you're standing next to them and hearing what the Vex would sound like if you were there, that definitely factors into how we created some of that stuff. Some of the, like, the higher frequency stuff that you'll hear in there is kind of representative of that exact thing. What would it be like if I was right next to the Vex? Oh, they'd be chattering away in a creepy, weird little way.
Yeah, not that you want to get too close to them, but...
Yeah, I was just going to say, like, in real life, I'm good.
Uh-huh, yep. Yeah, ranged weapons are your friends around them. And so, Josh, what were some of the, like, go-to synth sounds that you used? Anything special that you want to, like, give a shout-out to?
I tend to gravitate towards Omnisphere a lot, but I'll do a lot of custom work to it where I'll take and you know, find a sound or find a certain oscillator, and then I'll just tweak it and mess with it until I find something that's doing the thing that I want, whether it's spacey and airy and patty like some of that opening stuff is, or if it's going to be, you know, a much more aggressive sound with a arpeggiation to it.
It's such an amazing wash of sound, and it's so different next to the core, you know, Beyond Light soundtrack. And so I'm curious about how you guys view the music for these different seasons, because they're shorter, and a lot of times they, you know, they take us to different places and stuff. So does that give you a little bit more freedom to explore different kinds of sounds or different ways the music would be working?
When we're working on a season piece, I always have the feeling I can take maybe more risks with what I'm doing. There's something about the season. I don't know if it's the fact that it's sort of a one-off thing or whatever, even though it's advancing the story, it's a smaller thing, and it comes and then it goes. And so there's always a sense of maybe we can color outside the lines a little bit more on those. And that's why I love working on them.
The one thing I'll say on it is the most important thing is that what we're doing with these seasons, you know, is expanding the story and our understanding of what the universe is. And so all of what we do with the music is in support and pushing the boundaries sometimes of what Destiny sounds like musically, but obviously staying in Destiny land. So I'm sure you guys have more to add there too.
What I like about the seasons is just the variety. Like, you finish one, you're kind of tired, kind of going through the ending, like, woo, and then you start hearing about what the next one's going to be, and like, okay. That's going to be fun. I'm super stoked. And then you get, like, your fire's relit and you're excited to work on it.
You know, it's kind of like what I imagine these seasons. It's a little bit like having a lemon ice in the middle of a really big meal, because it just sort of breaks up the intensity of a lot of the music that you have worked on up until that point.
Yeah, I would second what Mike said on that. It's definitely allows us to take a big step in another direction if we really want to. So that's kind of what Season of the Splicer was. It was a very different direction.
I feel like the rest of the studio kind of approaches it like that too, right? Like the ghost, or what I call the ghost ship from Season of the Chosen. Like, that's just totally unique for in the world of Destiny. So it's just a fun, interesting thing to work on.
I'm going to ask this. I think I know what the answer is, but I'm curious anyway, because we've learned that the end of Destiny is coming pretty soon. And I'm just wondering if, you know, like, we learned J.K. Rowling had the last page of Harry Potter locked away in a vault. She knew what the whole story arc was going to be. And I'm wondering if you guys know how it all comes out.
Well, all I will say is that we have a very talented team and a lot of smart people, and I'm very excited, and I can't say anything else than that.
That's what I figured.
But I think Sky has more in his head than the rest of us, though. He's got an endless repository for the detail. He's great.
Well, one of the things that has been just made this such an incredible journey is the lore and the stories and the heartbreak that you read about with all of the, you know, the books that are published in addition to the game and stuff. It's just such a deep, deep world, and it's got such an incredible history. And so I know I will be really sad when we get to that last chapter. But in the meantime, it's going to be an amazing journey. And I would love to know how you guys managed to get this music recorded over the last year, because, you know, performing ensembles had to really limit the number of people who could be in a studio. Choruses were very problematic. And, you know, the chorus is such a big part of the music for Destiny. So how did you guys even manage that?
Very carefully. No, I will be more verbose than that. But yeah, it was very tricky. And I guess the best way I could put it without going into too much crazy detail is that we had to book lots of optional different approaches because we didn't know which ones might or might not work out. And we were fortunate that enough of them worked out that we were able to get everything recorded. But it definitely was like four or five times the usual amount of legwork to get everything done, because there was just the potential that any session could get canceled at any time. And we didn't know, we just had no foresight or knowledge of what may or may not remain available. So it was definitely a challenge in that regard.
Well, and you had to work with a different chorus this time too, rather than the choir that normally would record in the Seattle area at the Bastyr Chapel. So how were you able to line them up?
Well, we have recorded with them before, often for parts of the score, but this time we did pretty much the majority of the choir there. And partly it was because they happened to be the place where people could actually record choir at the time we needed to do it. And also is because they're really good. I mean, they're that's why we record there, even, you know, even in our in and out. Like it's not the place we necessarily always do our choir, but you hear choir from them in pretty much all of our soundtracks. So it's in a way it's new, but it's also not new. It's just we did a bigger dose there than we may have in general. And that's the main change.
Yeah, I want to give them a shout out too. It's the Budapest Arts Choir, and they are just, they've got such a phenomenal sound. It's such a unified sound. It's really great.
Yeah, we had a good time. I mean, obviously we miss our usual group of people that we record at Bastyr with, and they're great. We love choir in general though. It's just a pleasure that we were able to record live, and I'm just grateful that that's where it landed, because it could have been like, you know, it could have been the opposite. We could have gotten to a point where, well, just timing didn't work out and nothing was available. And then what, you know, we would have figured it out, and there were contingencies and they weren't as good as where we landed. So I'm just grateful it landed with live choir, and that ensemble did a really great, it's a pleasure to work with them as it always is. So.
I've heard stories from other composers about recording orchestras one or two instrumentalists at a time in the studio. And I don't know if you guys had to go to such an extreme route with that, but the orchestral sound that you got was just incredible from the Nashville Scoring Orchestra. So how are you able to pull that all together?
Yeah, we were fortunate that we didn't have to do one instrument at a time, but that was one of the options we had on our list of potential mitigations if it came to it. But we were able to, just due to the timing and just fortunate circumstances, we were able to record sections and get people in a room together despite, you know, certain limitations. And that made it, you know, much closer to the sound that we normally get. So could have been a lot harder. I mean, just the amount of time it would have taken if we had to record one violin, okay, next violin, okay, next, and then edit it all together. And I mean, we would have spent days more time doing that. Not to mention you lose the interplay that you get mm-hmm. when you have all the musicians in the room. So it came out really well, given all.
Yeah, well, how did you guys all work together? Because you probably weren't all in the same room at the same time either. So how did you, you know, stay together as a team?
Well, I'm going to go first on that one. I had been, you know, this was last summer, and I had been in quarantine for like three straight months or something like that. So when the opportunity came, I bought a plane ticket like in 5 seconds. I was going. So I actually got to be on site. The rest of the guys were remote. But, you know, when we're recording, we're all there. We're all talking. We're listening to each other. We're listening to the stuff. And there's just it depends. You know, every piece has like someone's kind of takes the lead on that piece, you know, and then the other guys are like backup. So, but it went well. And we were so fortunate. I can't even tell you that worked out. It was like, it was destiny.
I see what you did there.
He's good at that.
Yeah. Well, Michael and Josh, how about you guys? How did you stay, like, you know, connected and on the same page? I mean, did you guys have meetings every day or?
Yeah. We don't meet every day, but you know, we're typing to each other most every day. I mean, it's definitely just a different normal now, right? We've all gone through it, so we're doing our best.
Yeah. Well, it obviously. I mean, I wouldn't have known that you had to jump through all of these hoops to get the soundtrack recorded, because it's got the same high standard as the soundtracks from, you know, years ago. So however you guys managed it, the result is just phenomenal.
Well, thank you.
We had a really good team.
Yeah. Good team, good musicians, and a little bit of, you know, good timing in there too.
Yeah. Well, you know, every year you guys create so much amazing music, and I'm just wondering, you know, what keeps it fun for you? What do you look forward to every day? Mike, why don't you go first?
Well, it's funny. I've been doing this. I was just thinking, I've been doing this for 24 years now. And I still love it because I still feel like I'm learning and improving, and I still feel like I haven't really written my best piece yet. So that knowing that carrot is always out there is the thing that keeps it fun. And then the easy answer to that question is working with these three guys is absolute joy. I love it. We have a lot of laughs, a lot of fun. And, you know, we don't pull punches with each other either. We are, you know, we can be a little rough, but in a loving, friendly way.
Josh, what about you? What do you look forward to, or what's been keeping it fun for you?
First is working with all these guys. I mean, Mike, Sky, and Michael, you guys are just, you're phenomenal to work with. It's awesome to bounce things off you guys, and to have you weigh in and give me suggestions on things makes it an amazing job. The other thing is just, I get to create music every day. Every day I get to come into my studio and I get to sit down and go, okay, something new, a different melody line, a different rhythm, a different sound. I can pick up my guitar. I can just keep plugging away at music.
Yeah. Oh, that's so cool. And Michael, what about you?
It's insane to believe where we are, like where I am. I feel so blessed to be working with these guys. They're just the best in the industry. And to be honest, like, this is what I wanted to do when I was 12. So it is not hard to find the fun.
I bet.
This is my dream job.
Oh, that is so awesome. Sky, you want to wrap it up? What keeps you going?
Yeah, I mean, these guys pretty much said it pretty much all. But yeah, the the team, the composition team, the rest of the music team, the rest of the audio team, and everyone at Bungie. I mean, we have such a great collaborative way of building the game that, you know, there's just no part of the process that isn't fun. And like Michael said, getting something that we love every day, like, how can you beat that? You know, I think the only thing I'll add, going back to Michael or to Mike's comment about carrots, is that, you know, like, it's like cooking. You get to make new recipes and you throw a little bit of a thing in there that you've done before, but you do it a little bit differently. And the challenge of keeping it fresh is another thing that kind of keeps it engaging. And I think I like that part of it as well as all the rest. I mean, there's just too many things, but that's one thing that hadn't been said.
Yeah. Oh, that's so awesome. Well, I cannot wait to hear what you come up with next. And it's just been so much fun to have a chance to talk with this. I know it's a little later in the season. Normally, Mike and Sky, you and I get together like right after the game is released, but it's been really fun to let it simmer. I actually got through the campaign this time. And really fun to talk about some of the music for the seasons too. So thank you all so much. It's really been a lot of fun.
Thank you so much, Kate.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot.